This is VOA News, reporting via remote. I'm Jeff Custer. An agreement brokered by Turkey and the United Nations allowed a ship loaded with grain to sail out of a Ukraine port Monday for the first time since Russia invaded its neighboring country in late February. The cargo ship Rizzoni, registered in Sierra Leone, left the southern port of Odessa carrying more than 26,000 tons of corn bound for Lebanon. Turkey's defense ministry said other unspecified ships were also expected to depart Ukraine later in the day. Speaking to reporters at UN headquarters in New York, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres praised those who worked on the agreement that allowed the shipments to resume. He called it an important starting point and said it must be the first of many commercial ships bringing relief and stability to global food markets and addressing a global food crisis exacerbated by the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
People on the verge of famine need these agreements to work in order to survive. Countries on the verge of bankruptcy need these agreements to work in order to keep their economies alive. And in line with the humanitarian spirit of the initiative, the World Food Program is planning to purchase, load and ship an initial 30,000 metric tons of wheat out of Ukraine on a UN chartered vessel. WFP will have more details in the coming days.
Guterres called for the war in Ukraine to end and peace to be established in line with the UN Charter and international law. He said he hoped the agreement to resume shipping can be a step towards that goal. But the fighting does continue in Ukraine, where the nation's military forces have been scaling up attacks in an effort to reclaim territory in the south previously taken by Russia. The Ukrainian troops have made inroads in the Russian defenses and used U.S.-supplied rocket launchers to strike bridges and military infrastructure in the south. This is VOA News. U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has held talks with Singapore's leaders at the start of her Asian tour as questions swirl over a possible stop in Taiwan that has fueled tension with Beijing. Local media in Taiwan have reported Pelosi is expected to arrive late Tuesday night, becoming the highest-ranking elected U.S. official to visit in more than 25 years. Such a visit would spark fury in China, which regards Taiwan as its own territory and has repeatedly warned of serious consequences if the trip goes ahead. Pelosi and her office have not confirmed a visit, citing security protocols. In a meeting with Pelosi on Monday, Singapore Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong welcomed deeper U.S. engagement with the region, but stressed the importance of U.S.-China relations for regional peace. In a statement Sunday, Pelosi said she's leading a group of five other Democratic lawmakers to Asia to reaffirm America's strong and unshakable commitment to its allies and friends in the region. The trip also includes visits to Malaysia, South Korea, and Japan. French officials say a weekend blaze in the southern Gard region has injured four firefighters, but has now been contained. Associated Press correspondent Charles de la Despa has details.
Firefighting planes and helicopters in action, battling a ferocious wildfire. A firefighter spokesman says, amazingly, only two homes were hit by the flames, with dozens of houses preserved, and there were no civilian casualties. The Interior Minister had tweeted a message of alert on Sunday on the fire that had broken out around 3 p.m. in a pine forest in Aubert, a village of 2,000 inhabitants, and evacuations swiftly followed. France is set to enter another heat wave, and several departments have been put on alert for threats of wildfire. I'm Charles de la Despa.
In South Africa Monday, more than 80 men appeared in court to face charges in connection with the gang rape of eight women and the armed robbery of a video production crew west of Johannesburg last week. As the hearing took place in Krugersdorp Magistrate Court, at least 300 people gathered outside to protest and express the community's fury over the attack. News of the rapes and robbery has angered community and women's organizations in the area, who have complained that such incidents are common around Krugersdorp and the reports have not been taken seriously. The suspects are allegedly illegal miners known as Zama Zamas who dig for gold in the Johannesburg area's many closed mine shafts. Local reports say many of the illegal miners are foreigners, and residents also blame the Zama Zama gangs for ongoing widespread crime in the area. Police say the gang rapes occurred when a crew filming a music video at one of the abandoned mines was attacked by armed men late Thursday. Repeating the hour's top news story, an agreement brokered by Turkey and the United Nations allowed a ship loaded with grain to sail out of a Ukraine port Monday for the first time since Russia's invasion in February. Reporting via remote, I'm Jeff Buckley. This is
VOA. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
At 5 o'clock, you have to be in the yard. Our kids can't play. We can't go to the shops.
That's a resident in the South African town of Krugersdorp, where a film crew was attacked by a large group of suspected illegal miners. Details coming up. Also, Kenya says the government has no intention of banning Facebook. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The first grain shipment since February left Ukraine's Black Sea port today. The International Rescue Committee, IRC, welcomed the news, but Marisha Zapasniki, the IRC County Director of Ukraine, says the blockade should never have happened in the first place. Zapasnik tells VOA's Carol Van Dam she hopes additional shipments will soon be arriving in East Africa, where she says people are dying from hunger.
These grain blockages have greatly contributed to the growing global hunger crisis, especially in East Africa, and that's where we're hoping that the shipments will soon arrive. Countries in East Africa rely on Russia and Ukraine for over 84% of their wheat imports, and you know, in Somalia, the country relies 92% on this source of grain. So to give you an idea of the scale of the need there, in just one of International Rescue Committee's nutrition clinics in Mogadishu in Somalia, from April to May of this year, the IRC has seen a 265% increase in children under the age of 5 that are suffering from severe malnutrition. And that's just from April to May. Our teams on the ground report that people have already started starving, and really the window to prevent mass deaths is rapidly closing.
Who are the people that are dying of hunger in East Africa, and are the deaths a result in part, would you say, of this blockade?
Yes, definitely as a result of this blockade. Like I said, it's 92% reliance on this source of grain. And as in cases of malnutrition across the world, it's predominantly children that are hit the hardest, and then vulnerable people in the community.
You mentioned Somalia. What are some of the other countries in East Africa we're talking about?
We're talking about Kenya. We're talking about Uganda. We're talking about South Sudan.
What about the attacks on the Odessa port last week? You're there. Does that give you pause about other shipments getting out of the port?
Yes, and we're calling on the international community to keep the pressure up to make sure that these shipments continue to leave the port. You know, we're relieved, we're welcoming the fact that the first shipment has left Odessa this morning, and we had been advocating to make this happen, but it's only the first of many lifelines that are needed to ease this global food crisis and help millions of people at risk of starving around the world. One shipment is clearly not enough. The shipments need to continue, and the international community needs to make sure that we can guarantee consistent, safe passages for this food to reach their final destinations.
16 additional vessels are waiting to depart, according to Ukraine's Minister of Infrastructure. Is the IRC directly involved on the receiving end of these shipments, or who gets these grain shipments?
These are commercial shipments, these initial shipments, but we know that the UN is also planning further shipments after we have, you know, after there's proof that there's safe passage for these ships.
And do you know at all where these other shipments are going, if all goes as planned?
No, I think that there's still a lot of secrecy around timings and final destinations. And really, this first shipment is a litmus test to see, does the process work and have all of the safety mechanisms have been put in place, and can these shipments continue in the future? So really, we're closely following this first shipment and making sure that it does reach where it was supposed to reach.
That was Marisha Zapasnik, the IRC County Director for Ukraine. She was speaking with my colleague, Carol Van Dam, from Odessa, Ukraine. Kenyan ministers say the government has no intention of banning Facebook, despite a watchdog last week accusing the social media platform of failing to stop hate speech ahead of August 9th elections. Victoria Munga reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Kenya's National Cohesion and Integration Commission, NCIC, last week gave Facebook 1 week to comply with regulations against ethnic hate speech or risk suspension. The threat came after a report by rights group Global Witness said Facebook approved hate speech advertisement that promoted ethnic violence ahead of the August 9th election. But Kenya's Interior Cabinet Secretary Fred Matiang'i accused NCIC of making what he termed a careless decision on the matter. He assured the public that the platform would not be shut down. Kenya's Minister of Information and Technology, Joe Mucheru, echoed that vow to VOA in a telephone interview Monday. He said while issues raised were valid, they did not warrant blocking Facebook.
What I did not support is the idea that because something like that has happened, that the first recourse is to shut down a platform. That is not within our legal mandate. And we've been working with Facebook and many of the other platforms. Facebook, for example, during this electioneering period has deleted over 37,000 inflammatory comments.
In a statement last week, Facebook admitted having missed hate speech messages in Kenya, where national data shows an estimated 13 million users of the platform. A spokesperson for Facebook's parent company, Meta, blamed human and machine error for missing some inflammatory content and said they had taken steps to prevent such content. Kenya's Cohesion Commission said this year's election had seen less in-person hate speech as it migrated from political rallies to social media. It said the main perpetrators were followers of Kenya's two leading presidential candidates, former Prime Minister Raila Odinga and Deputy President William Ruto. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
As conflict in northern Ethiopia spreads into the Afar region amid lingering drought, some residents are appealing for help, saying they have nothing to eat and their children are dying. Reporter Henry Wilkins spoke to locals in the town of Rabite and to aid workers who say the Afar region administration should declare drought as a crisis to get needed assistance.
Aisha Mohammed lives by the side of the road in a makeshift camp on the edge of Erepti in northern Ethiopia's Afar region. She says members of her family have died of hunger. Mohammed says there's not enough food and drink and they do not have enough clothes or blankets, adding, "We expect God first and then the government to help us." In November of 2020, the federal government went to war against rebels of the former ruling group, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, or TPLF, in the northern Tigray region. The conflict weakened federal forces and contributed to the ongoing instability in the country. Mohammed is one of more than 5 million people displaced by the conflict. The conflict disrupted humanitarian aid convoys to Tigray, which borders Afar. There have been concerns that aid destined for Tigray has been stuck in Afar. The Famine Early Warning System Network, a US agency tracking food insecurity, says Tigray could be in a state of famine. Fuel restrictions also make it difficult to distribute food to remote areas. The Ethiopian government has alleged that TPLF attacks in Afar have compromised the passage of food trucks to Tigray. In recent weeks, however, World Food Programme trucks have been able to deliver to Afar and Tigray. Mohammed has seen aid trucks along the road where she lives, travelling from neighbouring Djibouti en route to Tigray. She says Tigray is getting more help than Afar. Mohammed says humanitarian aid goes to her enemies, which makes her feel sad, and that they haven't been given any aid for a whole month. "We notice the aid goes to Tigray while we are hungry," she says. The WFP told VOA via email, WFP delivers food assistance to 650,000 people in Afar. "This is as per our mandate requested by the government. We deliver in Erepti. We do not deliver in locations or to people who the government doesn't require our support for." Meanwhile, this reporter visited the graves of people who lived in the makeshift camp in Erepti. They included a child who was less than a year old. Residents say some people died of starvation. VOA was unable to independently verify the accounts. A local non-profit in Afar says difficulties associated with recovery from the conflict with Tigray and the historic drought are combining to create a deadly crisis for the region. Valerie Browning works for the Afar Pastoralist Development Association.
From a humanitarian position, we would really implore them to declare a drought, because, I mean, what we're doing is very little for the community and very insignificant compared to the need. So we're having to go into a community and choose those who may die in the next 2 to 3 weeks and then leave the rest to go down the hill.
The Afar Regional Administration did not respond to a request for comment on its decision not to declare a drought. A report by the Emergency Nutrition Coordination Unit in Afar says 1.3 million people are in need of food aid. In a July 26 report, the state-funded Ethiopian Human Rights Commission, EHRC, called for an intervention in regions affected by the droughts and blamed lack of early warning for much of the devastation. The report did not cover the Afar region, however. It only focused on the southern part of the country. Tarikua Getachew is Director of Law and Policy at the EHRC.
There are already a number of displaced persons and refugees in the Somali region. So it's a heavy burden on the region, but also nationwide. And we certainly hope that the report will mobilize further attention to it and further action.
The drought is Ethiopia's severest since 1981. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Erebti, Ethiopia.
The French news agency AFP reports that thousands of Sudanese protesters rallied in the capital yesterday to demand an end to military rule and tribal clashes that have killed over 100 people. "Down with Burhan," they chanted, referring to General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, the army chief, who last year led a military coup that upended a transition to civilian rule following the 2019 ouster of President Omar al-Bashir. Near weekly protests have been held since, despite a deadly crackdown that has killed at least 116 people, according to pro-democracy medics. The strength of the pro-democracy movement has ebbed and flowed since the coup, most recently rocked by a surprise announcement on July 4th when Burhan pledged to step aside and make way for factions to agree on a civilian government. Key civilian leaders dismissed his move as a ruse, and pro-democracy protesters have held fast to their rallying cry that there can be no negotiation, no partnership with the military. Meanwhile, the Associated Press reported Sudan has detected the country's first case of the monkeypox virus in the conflict-wrecked Darfur region. In South Africa, 84 men have appeared in court on various charges following a brutal attack on a film crew in the town of Krugersdorp near Johannesburg. Scores of men surrounded the crew who were shooting a music video near several old mines on Friday night. Police say 8 women were gang-raped. Other crew members were also severely assaulted. Darren Taylor reports.
South Africa has some of the highest murder, rape and robbery rates in the world, so citizens have become accustomed to violent crime. But the Krugersdorp attack was so vicious that it shocked the nation.
10 men will stand queue here. We are raped one by the other. 6 men will stand here, rape one of the other. How cruel, heartless were they? In front of others, they continue exchanging victims.
District Police Commissioner Fred Kekana says it's one of the worst crimes he's been involved with in his 27 years on the force. Surrounded by giant mine dumps in an area of the town called West Village, there was no escape for the 22-member film crew as the horde descended on them. Some of the attackers were armed with high-caliber rifles and handguns. National Police Commissioner Becky Cele told reporters his officers arrested scores of suspects shortly after they began hunting the perpetrators.
They are found on the mountains, on the bushes, and everywhere they are here. 2 of them resisted and fought the police, and they were shot dead. There is a strong suspicion that they are foreign nationals rather than being South Africans. The people that were raped are all South Africans.
Kekana later confirmed that most of the suspects in custody are undocumented foreigners, including a few identified by informants as known criminals in the area.
We mobilize ourselves, our crime prevention team, in civilian clothes we had to walk in. Park the vehicles, walk into those addresses and spots where they say they are hiding. We managed to arrest 4 Basotho nationals, 4 Zimbabwean nationals, 7 Mozambicans, 1 Cameroonian and 1 Malawian. We have done already our DNA. We took their buccal samples. We are profiling them. All of them will be standing identity parade. We'll expect our victims to be there to see whether amongst the people which they can identify.
Kekana says there's a good chance those arrested are wanted for other violent crimes. West Village residents say they've been living in fear of illegal miners, known in South Africa as Zama Zamas, for more than a decade. Police say Zama Zama gang members are mostly undocumented foreign migrants and are active mostly in Gauteng province, where hundreds of old mines date back to the gold rush of the mid-1800s to early 1900s. Locals say the Zama Zama gangs, usually clad in balaclavas and blankets, do what they please in the settlement.
We are not talking crime in West Village. We talk terrorism. West Village is under siege in the hands of these trigger-happy beings.
Another resident says the gangs work underground by day and emerge from the mine shafts at night.
We have now become prisoners in our own house. At 5 o'clock, you have to be in the yard. Our kids can't play. We can't go to the shops.
For Trele, the incident's further proof that some foreigners, legal and illegal, are very much part of organized crime in South Africa. Operation Dudula, an organization formed to drive undocumented migrants out of the country, has indicated it'll use the Krugersdorp atrocity to pressure the government to stop illegal immigration. Human rights groups are concerned that what's happened in Krugersdorp will spark hate crimes against foreigners across South Africa. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
At least 6 people were killed and more than 50 wounded today when a fuel truck exploded in a southwestern Libya. The cause of the blast was not clear. It happened when a crowd flocked around the tanker as it headed to resupply a petrol station in the Bent Baya district. A stampede occurred, followed by a massive explosion that set several cars on fire, according to the French news agency AFP. Interim Prime Minister Abdelhamid Dbeibah tweeted that his government was closely following the incident. Libya has Africa's largest proven oil reserves, but chronic corruption and theft from smuggling to neighboring countries means the pumps often run dry. Southern Libya is particularly affected by poor services and a lack of investment more than a decade since the overthrow of dictator Muammar Gaddafi and a NATO-backed 2011 uprising. Mali's military government has lashed out at French President Emmanuel Macron, accusing him of having a neo-colonial attitude and stirring up ethnic hatred. Annie Risenberg reports from Bamako, Mali.
The official statement was read by government spokesperson Colonel Abdoulaye Maiga on Mali's state TV and radio station ORTM and posted to the station's Facebook page. Maiga referenced statements made by French President Emmanuel Macron on the situation in Mali during Macron's visit to Guinea-Bissau, the last stop in a tour of West Africa in which he pledged support to several countries in the fight against extremism.
Le gouvernement de la transition exige du président Macron.
The government of the transition demands President Macron definitively abandon his neocolonial, paternalistic, and condescending stance, he says. Maiga also called Macron's remarks, in which he deplored systematic violence targeting the Fulani population, hateful and defamatory, saying they are likely to arouse ethnic hatred in Mali. Both the Malian and French armies have been accused of violence against the Fulani community in recent years during anti-terrorism operations. The UN accused France of killing 19 civilians during an airstrike on the Fulani village of Bounty, Mali in 2021, and human rights organizations have accused the Malian army of arbitrarily killing dozens of men from the Fulani ethnic group on several occasions. Maiga also called Macron's remarks expressing concern over the presence of Wagner mercenaries in Mali erroneous accusations. Mali has continually denied working with mercenaries since France first launched accusations that Wagner mercenaries were present in Mali in December of last year, claiming only to work with official Russian trainers. Russian President Vladimir Putin denied an official Russian presence in Mali during a press conference with the French president in February. France announced the withdrawal of its troops from Mali this year, partly over concerns that Mali is working with mercenaries, ending an almost decade-long deployment which began when France intervened after northern Mali was taken over by Islamist militants in 2012. In March, Human Rights Watch released a report in which several residents of Moura, Mali, attested to witnessing mercenaries committing human rights abuses and extrajudicial killings with the Malian army over a period of 5 days. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
Gunmen killed 8 Nigerian security personnel, including 3 policemen and 5 vigilantes, in an ambush in central Kogi State. In a statement, state spokesman Onogwu Muhammad confirmed that suspected bandits ambushed and killed 8 security officers. No group claimed responsibility for the attack, but Kogi State has seen an uptick in attacks recently, including some claimed by Islamic State extremists operating outside their usual base in the northeast. Security will be a major issue in next February's election to replace President Muhammadu Buhari, who is under increasing pressure over the country's worsening violence. Kogi Governor Yahya Bello suspended a traditional chief of the area and questioned the political administrator of the district over Saturday's killings, according to the French news agency AFP. Bello vowed to deal ruthlessly with anybody who romances with criminal elements, no matter how high placed they are. The new U.S. envoy for the Horn of Africa, Mike Hammer, who arrived in Addis Ababa on Friday, discussed with Ethiopian officials the upcoming peace talks with Tigray rebels and urged unrestricted aid to stricken areas. According to the French news agency AFP, he also reviewed the situation regarding the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, GERD, the large-scale hydroelectric project on the Blue Nile. During a visit to Egypt last week, Hammer said the U.S. is supporting a diplomatic way forward under the African Union's auspices that will yield a deal which benefits every citizen along the Nile. Egypt lodged a protest Friday with the U.N. Security Council against Ethiopian plans to fill the dam's reservoir for a third year without agreement from downstream countries. The multi-billion-dollar GERD is said to be the largest hydroelectric project in Africa, but has been at the center of a dispute with Egypt and Sudan ever since work began in 2011. Ethiopia deems the GERD essential for the electrification and development of Africa's second most populous country. But Cairo and Khartoum fear it could threaten their access to vital Nile waters. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Joe Gill, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays,